This is Family Policy Matters. This program is produced by the North Carolina Family Policy Council, a pro-family research and education organization dedicated to strengthening and preserving the family. And now from the studio, here's John Rustin, president of the North Carolina Family Policy Council.
Thank you for joining us for Family Policy Matters. It is our pleasure to have Alana Newman with us on the program this week. Alana is a donor-conceived woman and former egg donor who now passionately advocates against all forms of third-party reproduction. She is the founder of the Anonymous Us Project, an online story collective for third-party reproduction. Alana is also the director of the Coalition Against Reproductive Trafficking, which is a new initiative, and we're excited to talk with Alana today about that. Alana, welcome back to Family Policy Matters.
Thank you.
Well, it's great to have you on. Alana, as we begin, particularly for our listeners who may not be aware of it, tell us about the Coalition Against Reproductive Trafficking and why you started this initiative.
Well, I started CART as a response to the unquestioned promotion of third-party reproduction in this marketplace of children. That's what it is. It's a marketplace for children, and nobody's questioning it. And these fertility companies have a lot of marketing money, and nobody's talking about the consequences of it. Nobody's talking about the ugly side of it. Nobody's talking about the children's perspective. So my CART is an educational effort.
Well, that's great, and we'll certainly be getting into more of the details about this. Now, some of our listeners may or may not be familiar with all that is involved with third-party reproduction. If you would, define this for us and help us understand the scope that third-party reproduction includes.
It includes the sperm trade, egg trade, and surrogacy trade. So anytime a third person, someone other than the couple, an outside party comes in for the purpose of reproduction, and they're not a romantic partner. Could be for money or could not be for money.
Well, and it seems to be in our current culture just expanding and expanding and expanding and expanding into areas that maybe 10 or 15 years ago we would not have necessarily considered. Now, Alana, you have a powerful testimony as a woman who was conceived through third-party reproduction. If you would, share with us about your personal experience as a donor-conceived individual, how that shaped your life, and how it led you to speak publicly in opposition to donor conception and other forms of third-party reproduction.
Sure. My mom's first husband was infertile. Then at first they had adopted, so my older sister was adopted, and they wanted a second child and decided to use an anonymous sperm donor. I always knew, which my mom told me when I was very, very young, like 4 or 5, you know, it was hard on their marriage. I never had a strong connection to her first husband. When they divorced, I never saw him again at age 8. My mom remarried and had my little brother naturally with her second husband. And I grew up seeing, I had a very good perspective on the importance biology plays in the connection that parents have towards their children growing up. And then as a teenager and a young woman, I experienced all the typical consequences of fatherlessness, and I never connected the dots to it. I just, you know, I never got any protection from my social fathers. I never got their attention or love or any kind of major sacrifices from them. My mom was responsible for me. She worked to provide for me, and all the typical things. So, you know, promiscuity and trying to reach out. What do you have to do to get a man's love? And I experienced all of these, but I never really connected the dots on those. So I thought that the only real problem with third-party reproduction was anonymity. And so at 21, I sold my eggs as an open ID egg donor. It was extremely painful. I was treated like a product. I realized that. I thought that I was going to be entering into a relationship with the woman who bought my eggs and then the child, but there's no relationship at all. And I very much regret that experience. There's no long-term studies on the drugs that I had to take. There's women who've had strokes, women who have lost their own fertility, some women who have died, some women who have had ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome, and a lot of really serious health risks that they're not tracking because egg donation and IVF is a cash cow for medical entrepreneurs in the fertility industry. And so I was very angry about the loss of relationship with my father, very angry about the social consequences that had and, you know, educational failure. And so now I'm 29 years old and I've got married and I have two kids naturally, and I realize how vital fathers are and how vital mothers are for children. And I'm appalled that fatherlessness is being promoted and profited off of, and I'm appalled that motherlessness is now being promoted and being profited off of.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that, and I think your personal story, again, is so powerful. Now, on your website, you list what is referred to as the Big Five, reasons to oppose third-party reproduction, and you've touched on some of these, but let's talk a little bit more about each one if we can. The first of these is human trafficking. Explain for our listeners, if you would, the connection between third-party reproduction and human trafficking.
Well, one pregnancy can generate up to $300,000. So an egg, you know, if there's an egg harvesting, egg donation, surrogacy, it can cost up to $300,000 for one of these pregnancies. And it is a human trafficking loophole. People say you're not buying and selling children, but in fact, you're pre-selling and pre-ordering a child, and that's the loophole. Just because you signed the contracts and exchanged the money before conception, if you look at the contracts, it still stipulates it's a transfer of parenthood. And so that's why I call it human trafficking. Also, women are being used as baby machines. Like in a lot of developing countries, you have basically factories of women used as breeding machines, and they're almost in these prisons, you know, where they're watched over to make sure that they're eating just right, and but not for their sake, for quality control, separated from their family, mistreated if they're not producing, and it's an exploitation of women.
Well, I think that's something that's extremely important for folks to understand, and there's been a lot of attention given to human trafficking over the last several years, unfortunately so, but this is an area that is really hidden because of the nature of this industry. Now, another reason that you say that we should oppose third-party reproduction is its link to abortion. Explain that for us, if you would.
When human beings, like myself, become products with price tags, abortion is used as a quality control measure. So, you know, you can't return a human being and, like, take it back to the store, but they're using abortion in that way. So if a baby's gestating and it realized that it's not as healthy and or isn't exactly the product that they wanted, then they use abortion to get rid of it and start over. Like in Connecticut, there was a woman, the parents offered her $10,000 to abort the baby because it had some heart problems. And that kind of stuff is very common.
Well, we have done research, and I think in the article that you wrote for us for our magazine, Family North Carolina, there was a good bit of discussion about the whole notion of creating these designer babies. And so often, unfortunately, people think that the egg and the sperm, once they're joined together, that create that human life at its most early stage, that is a product that can just be thrown away if it is not meeting the criteria that those individuals that are attempting to create it want it to. It's so important that we recognize that as human life at its earliest stage, and every human life is worthy of protection. So we're so grateful for your willingness to speak out on this. Now, Alana, I know that you've also expressed concerns that third-party reproduction is used today as a form of eugenics. I know we've sort of been talking about that, but explain that a little bit further for our listeners, too.
Right. It's the perfect human being. People are trying to design and manufacture perfection. And the fertility industry, they're not interested in curing people's infertility. they are in the baby-making business, and they feel the pressure to manufacture better products. You know, they're trying to sell a better product. And, in IVF, what you do is you harvest a lot of eggs, you fertilize a lot of eggs, and you create a lot of embryos. And then what the doctors have the capacity to do and routinely do is they go in, and you can see with those embryos, there, it's the first stage of human life. You can see if it's a boy. You can see if it's a girl. You can see the hair color, eye color, how many chromosomes it has. And then you can just implant the ones that you would prefer and throw away the ones you're not interested in raising. And that's common. That's typical.
Well, Alana, what are some of the policy changes that you would like to see related to third-party reproduction? And is your ultimate goal to completely outlaw all forms of third-party reproduction, or are there forms that you consider to be acceptable within our current culture?
I think the easy things we can go after are an end to anonymity. And what ending anonymity does is it forces people to recognize the humanity of the person they're reproducing with, which is an important point. And I think ending payment. So if you quit paying egg donors $10,000 and $50,000 to undergo that painful, invasive procedure, I don't think they will. And they say 80% of sperm donors are motivated by money too. So if you end payment, I think you can stop the tide quite significantly. Yes, I would like to see an end to the marketplace in children, absolutely. But the multi-billion dollar industry, and just like what we've seen with these Planned Parenthood videos, with abortion, we've incentivized a bad thing. We've allowed people to make a lot of cash off of it. And same thing with third-party reproduction. We've allowed an industry, a very lucrative industry, and it's a huge beast now.
Well, clearly this is a complex issue, and so we're grateful again for you taking the time to unpack this for us. It is a growing issue, especially with the onset of the legalization of same-sex unions across our nation, because we know that those individuals who are in same-sex relationships are not able to naturally conceive children themselves, and so they have to seek outside parties to be involved in that process if they're seeking to have children, either through adoption or through third-party reproductive means. So I think it is a growing concern, something that policymakers, not only within the state but across the nation, need to give some serious consideration to. So, Alana, as we close, any closing thoughts or comments?
Well, if I can plug the website, reproductivetrafficking.org.
Absolutely. Please do. You already have, but let's do that again to make sure our listeners know where they can go to learn more about the Coalition Against Reproductive Trafficking.
Yeah, reproductivetrafficking.org, all the big five and the explanations. There's a lot of information there, accessible information.
Great. Well, let me repeat that website. It's reproductivetrafficking.org. Again, reproductivetrafficking.org. And I would just encourage our listeners to go visit that website to read more about all the work that Alana is doing. And Alana Newman, we thank you for sharing your time with us, your personal experiences with third-party reproduction, your personal testimony, and also for your continued efforts to raise awareness about the harms of third-party reproduction. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, John.
Before we close, I'd like to invite you to follow the North Carolina Family Policy Council on Facebook. Just log in and find us at ncfamily.org. Again, at ncfamily.org. Be sure to like us when you visit. In addition, for instant updates on pro-family news of interest, follow us on Twitter at ncfamily.org. Again, that's at ncfamily.org.
Family Policy Matters is an information and analysis feature of the North Carolina Family Policy Council. Join us weekly for discussion on policy issues affecting the family. If you have questions or comments, please contact us at 919-807-0800 or visit our website at ncfamily.org.